Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening. What are we going to talk about? Well, look, there is a whole host of international rugby that just happened last weekend with a clean sweep for the Rugby Championship sides over the Six Nations teams. Obviously, a couple of other teams that didn't do that with France and Italy, who were playing non-rugby championship sides, and they got their wins. But we'll go through all the results, and we'll have, obviously, a little bit more focus on the Maori All Blacks versus Ireland, the New Zealand versus Ireland, and Australia versus England, with a few comments about the other games as well. And joining me to go through all of that is Mr. Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, very good, as he unmutes himself. Yeah, good to be here, Paul. Always a privilege and a pleasure to be on the TDM.
Oh, fantastic. Great to have you. And are you using the new camera by any chance?
No, I'm not, no, actually. Is it coming across relatively clear?
No. So it's not as clear. It's more wide angle. We've seen more of the room than we normally see. Different angle for you this evening via the iPad than it must be. But sir, you got out and about for some club rugby this weekend, didn't you? It's got down to no, it wasn't College Rifles. Sorry, it was it was College Rifles playing, but they were away, weren't they?
They were at the home ground. They were playing away. They were playing at Western Springs. It was round 10 of Goodyear Tires Auckland Premier Club Rugby. I'd love a dollar for every time I've said that this year, Paul. It was a good the face for radio is back. Yeah, good on you, Nocturnal Rights. You're dead right. It was a big day for the Ponsonby Rugby Club. They had a couple of Centurions who played 100 matches, one Ben Bacon, and, of course, Alex Matapo, who basically joined his dad as a Centurion for Ponsonby. His dad, Harati Matapo, also played 100 games for Ponsonby. And it was also good to run into Census Johnson, former Samoan international, who has had quite a stellar career. I think he started in England. Excuse me, I'm not too sure which club, but I think he also spent a bit of time in Toulouse, in France, and so I caught up with Census and had a good conversation. But also the coup de grace, we picked up a interview with Patrick Tuipulotu, who spent a bit of time over in Japan playing for Toyota Verblitz. And I've got to say, Patrick looking in very, very good shape, looking very streamlined, and full credit to him, he went the full 80 minutes for Ponsonby, and they had a very comprehensive win by I think it was 64 points to 14, and I think they've pretty much got everybody looking over their shoulder at this point in time, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you can roll out people like Patrick Tuipulotu and Cecilius Johnson for your in your Auckland club rugby competition, that's not bad at all. If you want to catch those interviews that Stephen did, then check out the New Zealand Sport Radio Facebook page. They are all on there, and discussions are ongoing about or starting up for next season, what we're going to do around Auckland Club competition, whether we have a sort of a separate show just talking about it, whether we have a Facebook group, etc. So if you're interested in particularly, well, actually Auckland Counties, North Harbour, Northland Club Rugby, then get a like in there, because we'll keep you up to date with everything that we've got in that, coming up in that space. Personally, I was at Waihee for our Waihee A's last game of the season, having got through their season, having not won a game in their previous eight games, I think it was. They got the win in the final game of the season up against Coromandel. Now Coromandel had only won one game so far, so that's really put things tight at the end there, because over here in Thames Valley, the top four go off into a cup competition, then fifth to eighth go into another competition, and ninth place gets let off from having semi-finals. A late try by Coromandel meant that points difference meant that Coromandel finished 1 point in points difference ahead of Waihee, which is exactly what they wanted. So Waihee didn't have to go on to the semi-finals, and that was the end of their season. Whereas Coromandel, newly into or back into Premiership rugby after over here, after not being here, got what they wanted, which was an extra game. So some scenes after that as we hit the club rooms. Ex-president put a couple hundred dollars behind the bar, we also had a Centurion as well. He gets $100 behind the bar, so we had a bit of money behind the bar, got to watch the All Blacks game there in the club rooms, which was good fun. Nocturne says, "Is it me, or does the club season seem shorter these days?" Dunedin is going into semis this weekend. Yep, it's semis this weekend here in Valley as well. And basically, when COVID hit, we ended up having a shortened season. I think a lot of the feedback, in a lot of the provinces was that actually the clubs liked the shorter season. And hence, that's why we're seeing shorter seasons now. I think it might start put some pressure onto some clubs financially, as they'll have less game days and have their club rooms open a bit less. But so I think some clubs might find a bit of struggle there. But it's in response to what the players want. A bit like you'll also see that in years gone past, only the top four would go off into into finals. Now you'll see that Auckland Counties, Thames Valley, and I'm pretty sure that Waikato Dunes as well, I think quite a lot of the provinces now are having these two sets of playoffs where the top four go into one competition and then fifth to eighth go off into a secondary competition for finals, which means finals footy for more of the teams, but the season is shorter. So yes, things changing, and it's good to see provinces reacting, Stephen, to the demands or the requirements of the players in their regions.
Oh, very much so. You know, you speak about a shorter season. I know up in Northland, they've just played the one round. They had the club semi-finals on Saturday just gone, and of course we've got a final happening this weekend between Mid Northern, the very famous Northland club of the legendary Going brothers, and they are taking on Waipu, and I think Waipu were the 2020 champions, and they also beat Mid Northern in that particular game. So looking forward to heading up there. I'll be covering that on behalf of NZ Sport Radio, Paul, and right here in Auckland. Of course, only three rounds of the Auckland club competition to go in terms of round robin before we had semi-finals.
Yeah, so it's runs a bit longer in Auckland than some other places. We're hitting semi-finals here in Valley, Thames Valley next weekend. I'll be heading over to Thames for Waihee Bees up against Thames Bees in their semi-final. So looking forward to the rugby this weekend. And yeah, folks, do get out to your clubs and do go watch the All Blacks games, other games down at the club rooms. It is good rugby down there. And good evening to everyone who's in the live chat, folks. Don't forget, you can join us at 8 p.m. Every Monday on New Zealand Sports Radio Facebook page, YouTube channel, or at Driving Mall on Twitter. And also, the show goes out as a podcast as well. Just search New Zealand Sports Radio for that. Let's kick on then into the professional rugby from the weekend. From last week. We'll kick off first with the Maori All Blacks up against Ireland in the first time the Maori All Blacks have played a Tier 1 nation in quite a few years. I think the first time that Clayton McMillan, the head coach, had coached them against a Tier 1 nation. Brad Webber also pointed out he'd never played against a Tier 1 nation part of the Maori All Blacks, something that they've been trying to get for a number of years. They didn't come together for that long, only had about a week's worth of preparation. So for those of you who are not from New Zealand, the Maori All Blacks, are a bit like the Barbarians, have a tradition of throwing the ball around and playing exciting rugby. And we saw that on Tuesday night, even in the rain. Which promised to be a pretty not so great game there. As Nocturne Wright says, yeah, a great tribute to Sean Wainui, and it was also with Bundiaki laying down an Ireland jersey, and Sean Wainui's wife and children coming on to collect that his tribute to him. He was being a key part of the New Zealand Maori for the past few years. It was a bit of a change of the guard as well with Ash Dixon has headed overseas. He was no longer captain. We had co-captains in Brad Webber and also TJ Piranara in that one. You can see those, you can see the interview that talks about with TJ about what it meant to him to become a Maori All Black. Also taking over filling the shoes of Ash Dixon from Brad Webber, and all the post-match interviews are over there. There is one that we will play, one section we'll play during this, but you can get all that over at patreon.com/NZSportRadio for that. I thought, look, the Maori All Blacks, particularly in that first half, counterattacked very well. Considering the short amount of time they had, put together a very cohesive performance, Stephen.
Yeah, interestingly enough, Paul, after 22 minutes, the score was actually 10-8 to the visitors. Bundiaki had scored that very good try off a line-out set piece, and I thought we were in for a tough evening, but they had a real B-look about their side, and it, and you can see they just struggled with certain combinations, and of course, whenever they left the ball lying around, the Māori pretty much exposed them with some great long range tries. I mean, it's the try that Callum Grace, who I thought had a very, very good game on the back of a super season, scored, was a very, very good try. Although Sean Stevenson, who in the main had a pretty good game, it probably wasn't the best pass threw it at Billy Harmon's foot. So maybe Billy's got a chance of getting a football contract with skills like that, Paul. But it was a very good try, and they looked quite sharper. And you know, before you know it, I think leading 32-10 at 10 at halftime, I think the game was as good as gone.
It was, as you say, that pass that Sean Stevenson passed, look, on another day, that doesn't lead to a try. There were a couple of passes that went behind Joshuani that got picked up rather than being turnovers. So, look, even when things weren't going quite right, they still fell the Maori All Blacks way, and they had a good night. Look, Ireland, they had seven players in that side who are not part of their first choice for their... for their provinces. So look, a similar to the Maori All Blacks. Look, this wasn't a first choice Ireland side by its long stretch. And let's have a quick listen to Farrell, where he'll talk about first off how he's used this game, and as Simon Hughes puts in the live chat there, how little time there is in the run up to the Rugby World Cup, and then also his thoughts on having these midweek games and how it came about.
Inexperienced players and new guys in the green jersey. How much are you using this for 2023, and how much is this game sort of looking beyond that for expanding the how have you used this game basically?
I said to you in the week, this game is huge to us, and the next Mary game is they're just as important as the Test matches, because you know, it's well documented that there's been seldom chances of playing international rugby, especially away abroad on tour over the last 3 years, and you try and find ways of giving people a chance, because before the World Cup, there isn't that much time. Time is running out as far as that's concerned, so we've got to find ways about people and give them an opportunity.
It's rare to have these midweek games on tours nowadays. Is it something you want to see more of? Do you enjoy? Is it a challenge you've enjoyed?
They're old school, aren't they? I used to enjoy them, definitely. I used to enjoy playing more than training. I don't know what you think, Bundy.
Yeah.
You know, to just roll your sleeves up and get stuck in. Yeah, I think that's why we all started playing in the first place, you know, to compete. So I love the concept of a Lions tour, etc. You know, this is a bit unique in itself, obviously, with Ireland doing this for the first time. It's because of what's happened to the world in the last 3 years, and it'll stand to us in the future.
So yeah, it's interesting that it's something that's come about because of, basically COVID, meaning the lack of games for Ireland. We'll see whether it is something that we do have in future. It clearly wasn't this is the new way of doing things now. So we'll have to see whether they get to where they continue. But I think a lot of people have liked them. I guess, Stephen, as Nocturne Rights puts in it, Irish coping it with injuries. Is Cane Healy really fit enough on the bench? Look, one of the things that came out of this game was the starting loose head for Ireland got knocked out in the first minute, went off, passed his HIA, was allowed to come back on again. New Zealand Rugby have come out and said, look, the independent medical officer wasn't given the correct videos, and they'll tighten up on that process. He should not have come back on. So it's good to see that they realise they made a mistake. But then Cane Healy got what looked like a pretty nasty knee injury. I guess a question there, Stephen, as to whether Farrell's brought enough players on this tour with the midweek games as well as the Test matches.
Yeah, well, I suppose those questions were being asked the very next day when Kieran Healy did get injured, and a little bit of speculation going around. I know there were a couple of people in the media saying that maybe they look at somebody like Ollie Jaeger and bring him in, but you know, with the greatest of respect, I think he's a New Zealand contracted player, even though he is Irish. But I do know that they actually brought former Irish international and Taranaki player Michael Bent into the squad, but I think that was primarily to utilise during practice times. So yeah, it's just going to be one of those great questions. But you know, they too much a tough.
Sorry, you broke up towards the end there. Let's hope it didn't break up for the our listeners as well. But Stephen broke up there for me. We'll have to see how it goes, how it progresses from there. But as I say, Maori All Black game, really enjoyed it, and it was nice to be great to be there for that one. Head over to, I say, New Zealand Sport Radio, NZ Sport Radio Patreon page to have a look at the post match interviews over there. So that led on then to the All Blacks versus Ireland, a game that I did a couple of previews for an Irish radio station and an Irish podcast ahead of this one. I'll be honest, my prediction was for an Ireland win by 3 points in this. Perhaps probably didn't take into account the impact of these injuries, and I probably overstated the impact of the COVID disruptions on the All Blacks. The All Blacks said they had prepared for this contingency of if they lost players and coaches and how to deal with that. I wasn't convinced by that argument, but you got to take your hat tip, I guess, to Ian Foster, that look, whatever contingency plans he put in place, it worked, and that All Blacks team that arrived on Saturday looked fully prepared, Stephen.
They did. It was, I think, a real surprise to everybody that they would have that sort of cohesion, given that a couple of players had dropped out with COVID. You had the likes of Quintupaya and Rico Ioane as a midfield. We all wondered how much those two would come together as a midfielder. There was also a lot of talk pre-match about Scott Barrett as well, because obviously the last time he played in that number six jersey, the All Blacks had exited from the RWC in 2019. So, yeah, what a surprise!
First off, we're going to have to make an apology to Rico Ioane, and I've said on a number of occasions that this. And we've questioned other people about his passing, but actually he passed the ball six times and only ran it four times. So suddenly he's become a passing centre. Which was good to see. Look, and yes, you're right. Scott Barrett, a lot of us thought it was a mistake to put him in there. But I think we saw a couple of things from that November tour come through. One of the things we heard after the French game was... I remember Sam Kane saying, look, we should have pick and goed more, should have bashed it up a bit more through the forwards rather than just trying to go wide and try and play all the time. And I think we saw that that we saw the forwards playing a lot narrower in this game and really looking to assert themselves on the opposition with ball in hand. And then on defence, look, Ireland started off well. They got that early try on 6 minutes with Keith Earls, who had started also in the Maori All Blacks game. So Wednesday to Saturday, boy, oh boy, he backed up on that one. But then to me, look, the line speed, the defensive pressure from the All Blacks basically pushed Ireland into mistakes. As you say, that inexperienced sense combination of... Tupaia and Rico Ioane up against someone like Ringrose, who's got a lot more experience. I've gone blank as to who the number 12 was. Henshaw Ringrose, wasn't it, I think? A much more experienced centre combination. But that Irish centre combination did make mistakes, and hence why Ireland did 20 turnovers and why we saw Xavier Rees get that try, Quinn Tupaia get those breaks going. I just don't think Ireland coped with that pressure in that game with that one. And then with that lead at halftime, look, the game was over, let's be honest, and the All Blacks saw it out very well. Before we get on to the controversies, as they've already come up into the live chat around citing commissioners, any other points from the game that you want to bring up first?
Yeah, listen, there's always been a lot of question marks about the age of our two locks. Gee, I'll tell you what, Sam Whitelock, to me, just gets better with age. I thought he was very, very good. Still want to see a little bit more from Brody Retallick. You know, we probably were a couple of seasons ago, but for me, you know, speaking of a night of eating humble pie, I was pleased with the tight head props. You know, like Scott Barrett, a lot of talk pre-select team was selected about the selections of both Angus Tavau and also so much for Tuanga Fassi, but Carl Tuanuku-Afi. But listen, I thought that was one area in the forward play where they definitely had an edge pull. And it was pleasing to see. On saying that, you know, with this Irish team, they are predominantly, a lot of the team are from one particular club side, which is Leinster, and we've just got to remember that these guys have played a lot of rugby in the last few months, and the high pressure rugby in the last month or so. You know, exec quarterfinals, semi-finals, etc. So I hope it's one of those situations where it's not starting to show, but you know, it comes back to your point before, Paul. Maybe have they bought enough players to actually freshen these guys up a wee bit?
Yeah, no, actually, I think so. I don't think I bought that. I think there are a few players short of what they of what they need. And I'd say you had Keith Earls starting on Wednesday, starting again on Saturday. Bundyaki starting again, also on Wednesday on the bench on Saturday. So, yeah, it's as two examples, let alone the props and the injuries. A couple of controversial things to come out of this game. Let's start off with Hegnox, because obviously off the back of the Maori All Blacks game, and Farrell gets saying, oh, look, he passes HIA. We just took him off as a precautionary. Kind of, you're like, mate, look, come on. It's clear to other people that wasn't really a situation. Johnny Sexton off and failed HIA after 31 minutes on Saturday, is apparently passed his second HIA, and they're hoping to have him back again for Saturday. Like, gee, come on, guys. World Rugby is supposed to have just come out with a 12-day stand down if you fail your HIA. So where does this come from? Johnny Sexton, when he was playing for Racing 92, I think it was he was playing for over in France, ended up having to take something like 4 to 6 months off through concussions and for a number of repeat concussions within a 12-month period. Very sad to see. I mean, it'd be very, the wrong thing to see Johnny Sexton back next weekend. Is he key for this Irish side? Yes, he is. Absolutely. But having seen Carl Heyman come out and talk about his early onset dementia that he's having living down in New Plymouth now, and some of the problems he's going through, it's not worth trying to win one game on tour. It's not really worth trying to win a World Cup either, but winning a tour game, absolutely not. To me, Johnny Sexton should be taking a rest next weekend soon.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with you. You know, there were a couple of clean-outs that probably warranted a little bit more scrutiny from the officials. Okay, I've just been schooled there from Simon Hughes that Leinster are not a club side; they're a province in Ireland. Okay, well, they probably call themselves a club, but hey, we're probably not splitting hairs there. Put protocols in place. You show that it's failed; the system broke down somewhere. And that's not a holistic thing. It's just really the people who are managing those protocols who are at the game.
Yep, absolutely. And look, it's if you haven't seen Carl Heyman's interview, or I've only seen a written version, but go and go seek it out, because look, when he says, look, he gets no help from New Zealand rugby, and it's kind of like, yeah, did his problems happen while he was playing in New Zealand? So will ACC help, or were his problems when he was playing overseas in England and France? Well, look, at the end of the day, he's a rugby player, he's part of the rugby family. You'd hope that, I'd want New Zealand rugby to be helping out all those players who are here. Now, is that them taking, accepting responsibility? No, not necessarily. No, I'm not saying that. But still, helping these people out who are, allow us to watch this game is post-career. Is an important thing to do.
Yeah, and he plays in a position where there's a lot of contact pull, not just in the tackle, but even I would imagine on the hits as well. I mean, I would hate to think how many times he's not just in practice, but in actual games where he's packed a scrum. So it's somewhere along the line. It's probably gonna tell at some stage, and I would imagine playing in Europe as well, where they tend to pack down. They love a scrum up in Europe, so you'd probably pack down a few more up in the Northern Hemisphere as well. I really do feel for the bloke, but you know, sometimes trying to pinpoint where a long term injury has happened is always hard to, it's hard to say, you know, and sometimes you just put it down to wear and tear. You know, we all carry an injury of sort, whether it's a meniscus disc or a dodgy sort of ankle, where we did it. Sometimes you don't really know, but it's just sometimes wear and tear from a knock that you've actually had and probably haven't realized that you've actually had. And I think that's probably where I put, unfortunately, Carl Heyman's issue in a particular basket.
Yep. Noxon writes, is the nature of rugby pushing the regs and laws and beyond? Is that the nature of rugby? Look, we'll definitely get onto that during the Australia-England game about pushing the regs. But you are quite right that that is, that's one thing I've said before is, look, if you're not cheating in playing rugby, you're not playing rugby at the end of the day. Nowadays, is the complexity of the law book basically means that there's a law broken every single breakdown. So look, yes, everyone's cheating. The question is how much cheating is allowed by the referee at the end of the day. Which pieces do we want to be cheating on? Look, head injury protocols is not what we want to be cheating on, I'm afraid. That's a regulation we do not want to be pushing to the line. Scott Barrett, starting to get a bit of reputation here in New Zealand, at least, for his disciplinary approach. Ruck near the All Blacks line, he went to counter ruck from where we were looking, from the clips you've seen on Facebook, etc., on YouTube, Twitter, not YouTube, you'll see that he didn't use many arms at all. It's pretty much a shoulder, went diving in onto another player, hitting what looks like the head. Now he's got away without any sanction at all in this one. I think Stephen, he's a bit lucky to get away with that. Personally, I think that's one that should have been should have been pulled up.
Oh, I think so, Paul. As I saw one post on Twitter, he probably owes the production crew of Sky a couple of beers for shying away from that particular incident. Very, very lucky. Obviously, nobody got to see it in real time, but it's certainly been doing the rounds on the social network. But even if you're the most ardent All Black supporter, and it happened, it was the other way around, I suspect many All Black fans would not be happy. And it's just disappointing that they actually can't do something. You know, I know it's up to a particular team to cite Barrett, but, you know, I think this is where maybe common sense should come into play, Paul, where the citing commissioner is the guy who probably should cite that incident. For me, it was probably a red card incident, and he's got away with it.
Yep, absolutely. So a number of questions in the live chat that I'll get through in a second, boys. Johnny Hill also in the Australia-England game didn't get cited. Now, the citing commissioner can cite if he sees something that he thinks should have been a red card. Also, the opposition can cite something that they see. Now, there seems to be some sort of gentleman's agreement that you don't cite each other at the moment, because, say, Johnny Hill wasn't cited by Australia. And we've also seen that Scott Barrett wasn't cited by Ireland. We've got John joining us, who will be telling us that that South Africa don't cite players either. And I think this is the wrong approach there seems to be this sort of gentleman's agreement to not do this stuff. Look, if you see someone do something illegal, it needs to be cited, it needs to get looked at. Otherwise, it's never going to get cleared out of the game. But good evening, John. How are you doing? And by the way, I can promise you that over video link, we will be not infecting you with COVID.
Oh, no, it's me that I'm concerned about, boys, infecting you. I'm still in COVID quarantine. So if you're okay with it, I'll take it off then.
Over video, absolutely. I'll guess. We're only in a virtual room. that one should have been. Nocturne Rights points out that a journo asked Foster about it and he was grumpy at the mention. Look, whether you like Foster as a coach or not, from a coaching ability, one of the things you have to admit is he is very poor in post-match interviews. After the semi-final in the 2019 Rugby World Cup, he offered to take a journalist outside and give him a rugby lesson, which essentially means he offered to take a media person outside and beat them up because he didn't like the question they asked. He is not good post-match interviews. And he really is not. He does not answer questions well. And it's one of the things that one of the reasons why he isn't liked by the New Zealand public. He does not come across well in media interviews.
No, that's not why.
No, that's not the only reason. I said it's one of the reasons.
I don't think it's 0.1%.
Well, anyway, look, it's wrong how he responds in that piece, and journalists have the right to ask those questions, absolutely, and find out what his thoughts are, all you could do is say, "Oh, I didn't see it at the time."
I think I've got to say, given Scott's history, I would have thought Foster would have at least acknowledged it, because it's just not a good look.
Yep.
I think that there's a developing pattern here of borderline behavior, and it may cost New Zealand really badly at a moment that they don't need it, because from Saturday's performance, it looked like a potential solution for the blindside flank position is presenting itself in Scott Barrett, because they're certainly going to need some additional height in the lineup. And if he is going to put himself at risk with his tackling technique or clearing out technique, this is not something that New Zealand can afford to take a chance with. He really needs to be addressed.
Barrett needs to learn how to hold that tightrope feel more. Simon Hughes is just curious, do Sky actually control the video that the video ref can see? So the video ref basically has a couple of screens. It's not as sophisticated as we had when they had Hawkeye at the Rugby World Cups. But for example, I've been in the video ref's box at a Super Rugby game recently, and they showed me the screens they have. So they have the live feed, and then they have a delayed feed that they can rewind and fast forward themselves. One feed, yes, they basically get the same as you get at home, which is obviously set up by Sky. So they don't get to see all the angles or all the cameras. They just get to see the main feed camera, but they can then take that one backwards and forwards. And then obviously if they're actually reviewing something, they can ask for different cameras to be shown. I think they might have one of those screens where you have like five or six screens on one screen. But yeah, that's not sort of big enough or high enough resolution for you to see that much, to be honest. So it's a lot better than it used to be. They do have some have control over one screen that can go backwards and forwards. The home broadcaster, and we've seen it across multiple countries. This is not a Sky thing by any stretch, where they can the home broadcaster can choose to put things up on the big screen in ground, which can obviously impact what the referee sees, and also how the crowd reacts to situations. And clearly, that was one they were not going to show within Eden Park.
Well, I think there's a mistaken practice, mostly around the world when it comes to TV production, is that you see this sort of partiality in the way the editor cuts in when the game is played. So when there is a potential mistake by the ref, even if it's not correctable, and the mistake by the ref disadvantaged the home team, then they go back and they show it, whatever that may be. If it disadvantages the away team, then they don't. If the advantage accrued to the home team. And I think it's a mistake by editors, because the purpose of the TV broadcast is to entertain. And part of the entertainment is the controversy that arises. And it's the to and fro. Yes, that's a penalty. No, that's not a penalty. That shouldn't have happened. That should have, you know, and that's part of the whole show. And the more drama you can introduce into the show, the more engaged the people at home become. And so I think it's just it's a bad mistake, and it's a bad philosophy by editors around the world. Oh, what's it produce? What do they call it? Director, the director of the broadcast.
Yep.
Yep, don't disagree with anything John just said there. He's dead right. I mean, it's like people like controversy. I mean, it's like going along to watch a movie and it's got a dramatic storyline.
So there you go. That's our thoughts on Scott Barrett's one. As John says, look, he is looking like, I think we have to say congratulations to the All Blacks. Look, good performance. They've stepped it up in that forward department. Maybe there is an answer at six. And Topu Vai was also given a run out at six for the Chiefs as well. Could he be a backup if Scott Barrett got injured, for example? Also, again, centre combination. Look, which is number that 12 jersey. You've got to say Topu Vai is another performance like that. And I think he's making a good case that... not Topu Vai, sorry. Now he's got that because Jack Goodhue's had COVID, he grabbed it with both hands and played very well. Could be playing himself into a more permanent 12 jersey.
Look, I just think, and Steve and I often have a to and fro about this. I just think it would be good if we give some credit. You said it a little bit earlier, Paul, that this was an incredible...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Disrupted week, and when it comes to all the internationals, when it comes to the coaching performance of the round, the All Black coaching team, what they pulled off and the quality of the performance that they delivered on Saturday is outstanding. So, you know, let's give some credit where it's due, that in this week with so much upheaval, what they managed to get right and the level of cohesion that they had was amazing. And their much maligned experiment with Scott Barrett at number six seems to have paid off. Well, look, one swallow doesn't a summer make, but it looks like they're on the road to solving that problem.
Yep, I think a lot of humble pie for us for us pundits around a number of things. We said that at the beginning. I also the way that they've managed to put the contingency plans in place in case and when COVID happened was very good. They pulled off something that I wasn't expecting them to do.
Guys, I was going to say that's not to detract from some of the rugby Ireland did play. Boy, they created a lot of opportunities, and on another given day, they could have got a heck of a lot closer. And I want to highlight a player that I was super impressed with, and that was the hooker Sheehan. I thought he had an absolute standout game. And even if you think back to the first try that I think it was Sevu Rees scored, the guy that basically chased him all the way to the goal line was Sheehan, the hooker, and he was still gallivanting around in the 75th minute. So I was really impressed. Listen, I tend to agree with Andy Farrell. They actually created a lot. They just weren't accurate enough, and good scrambling defence from the All Blacks.
Yeah, I thought Carberry in the second half was better than I was expecting without Sexton being off as well. Someone who should be getting a lot more game time next weekend, as I say, because Sexton I think should be stood down. But yeah, interested to see how he goes.
That's why.
Just a quick thought, gentlemen, while Steve Wax is lyrical about Northland. I wonder whether the change of the rules, we are seeing it play out in what happened on Saturday. So previously, when somebody got over the line and was held up, it was a 5-meter scrum, and the team was still under incredible pressure. If the opposition, the attacking team, had a decent scrum and wasn't under pressure on their own feed, then the defending team was still in huge pressure, 5 meters out from their own line. But now, if you get over the line and are held up, it's a dropout from the goal line. The pressure is transferred far away from where you're trying to defend. And I wonder whether we're seeing, although full credit to the All Blacks, their defense was full of character, full of desperation. But I wonder if we'll see a lot more held up over the line, because the difference between being held up and scoring is now so much wider than it was before the new rules.
Okay, and that's also, you say that's it's required a whole new set of training as to how do you go into a tackle close to the line to make sure that you get underneath and blah blah blah.
Underneath, turn, wrap, lift. I mean, there was some brilliant play by the All Blacks, and it's clear, to at least to me, that the coaching staff has focused on, in that position, what is the best way to prevent the ball from being placed, even if the player manages to break the plane of the goal. So, yeah, huge kudos to the All Blacks and the training that they've done in order to do that. But I wonder if we're going to see more and more and more of these instances. It was quite unusual in the old days to see somebody held up over the line.
Yep, no, true. Not to realize, it was wasted time about setting scrums. Yeah, we understand why they've done it. But it does. This is one of the unintended consequences, is that perhaps you try, in some ways, if you can get your body underneath the opposition, perhaps you let them get over the line, even. If you get yourself into a, you're right, you'll probably see more of that. Also, it does, I think Ireland, to me, kept with plan A, with the forwards bashing away. When they got held up several times and they weren't using that width, it also encourages you to use the width and trying to find space rather than trying to bash it over where there are going to be more bodies around, therefore more likely to get held up over.
I don't think it's, as time has unfolded with this rule, I don't think it's a good rule, because I don't think if you manage to get across the line, you should then be fielding the ball back on the halfway. Right? That makes no sense. You got all the way there, you held up this much above the ground from scoring, and the next minute your fullback is catching the ball on the halfway line. That's not in the spirit of the game, but still, we'll see how this thing unfolds.
Yeah. If it makes teams spread out more, look for space when attacking the line, I'm not, as an unintended consequence, I'm actually not that, I'm happy for it. Stop that just bashing away. And make players make teams find space rather than trying to find contact. Moving on then from the All Blacks game onto the Australia versus England. Well, we can talk about the rugby, I guess, which Australia won, and Dave Rennie is improving his team. But rather than as we're kind of coming towards the, as we don't want to overrun by too much, and I know John, I want to talk about South Africa, Wales. All the talk has been about Johnny Hill winding up Darcy Swain until Darcy Swain banged his head into or pushed his head into Johnny Hill's head. Now, whatever you think about what Johnny Hill did, Swain's actions is a red card every day of the week. You putting your head into someone else's head is a straight red. Yeah. How damaging you are, how much force it has, is irrelevant, right? We're not you can't be putting your head into someone else's head. So that's that piece. On the Johnny Hill side of things, two hands to the face, pushing someone away at the on the advantage line should be a card. Well, it's penalty and to me a card. Put hands in the face was in that situation. There's no excuse for it. You can't say it's accidental. I mean, Darcy Swain's tall enough. Stephen?
To me, he's actually committed two yellow card offences, which basically, whilst it's not on the field, it actually equates to a red card. So to my way of thinking, both of them, the push in the face and the hair pulling is foul play. They're both yellow cards. And quite frankly, that should result in a red card, which should result in a suspension this weekend.
Well, that's the case. So the first one basically was the it's not been cited. The referee didn't do anything at the time. So as far as World Rugby is, or as far as the officials at this game, rather than World Rugby itself, are saying, and that's he didn't. Apparently, you're allowed to push someone in the face at the if they're standing where you don't want them to stand.
And pull their hair, but as long as nobody complains about it.
The pulling habit came later. So that's a separate incident. Mm-hmm. The incident where he pushed the guy in the face, you can't do that. Apparently, you can do that, according to World Rugby. Later on, the pulling the hair and the other handbags, he got a yellow card for that. So that clearly, he's not allowed to do that. Mm. Why it's only yellow? We've seen pulling hair before be red carded, particularly in women's games where they've got ponytails. So I mean, look, that was he could have had two red cards, but bluntly, pushing someone in the face. Okay, it's not a punch, but if you're going to heal someone in the face, you should not be doing open hands to people's faces. A handoff is different when you've got hand carrying the ball.
Yep. I agree with you. He was playing the classic instigator role, wasn't he? You could see this being straight out of the Sean Fitzpatrick playbook. You know, fiddle, pull, squeeze, tug, hold, obstruct, whatever. The person retaliates and turn around to the ref, going, such an innocent lamb. Look what's being done to me. He bit my ear. He pulled my nose. Right? And he got what his team wanted. He got a yellow, another guy got a red, and his team was immediately on the front foot. So how do you prevent that from happening? I don't know, but certainly it's a classic instigator role of prod, and then, oh, mom, look what he did to me. Look what my brother did to me. Prod. Innocent, right?
Now, and he wasn't doing it to any other player, right? So everyone's like, Hill's in trouble next game. He's like, no. He was doing it deliberately to one player that they knew would react, right? He wasn't doing it to everybody. This was a coached, planned move. Yep. Everyone's like, it's not in the spirit of the game. Folks, I'm sorry, but the spirit of the game doesn't exist, folks. As I said earlier, if you're not cheating rugby, you're not playing rugby. Now, do I approve of this kind of behaviour? No, I don't. I'd say it needs to be stamped out quickly. Look, now that we don't have punching in rugby, there is no there's nothing to stop you from doing this kind of stuff, basically, apart from the referee.
We shouldn't forget that was really a really dumb thing for Swain to do, and you could see he was pretty mortified about what he did. But on saying that, we shouldn't get away to the fact that this actually turned out to be not a bad game of rugby, fellas,
it did.
And man, a guy that you've got to give a ton of credit to is Lelisio for basically coming. He didn't think he was playing, and all of a sudden, he's basically playing, and I read somewhere where it probably was the best thing to happen to him because he said, I didn't have a chance to get any nerves. So I just basically went out there, did what I had to do. And I actually thought he showed a lot of composure because he copped a bit of criticism after the Super Rugby semi-final Blues where a lot of people said, listen, you probably should have just, as opposed to a drop kick, should have basically held on the ball, gone through the phases. And there are a couple of other good stories as well. I thought James O'Connor being up in the corporate box having a beer, having to come down onto to the bench as a reserve, I thought that was really outstanding. So this performance, John spoke before about the disruptiveness that the All Blacks have. Man, that's that's disruptive right there. You get a red card, you got a guy coming in and late, and then all of a sudden you lose a couple of key players along the way. Didn't they lose Alalatoa and they lost Tom Banks? I got to say, guys, in terms of adversity, that's a lot of adversity to unpack and still come through with the victory. That you speak about the All Black coaching performance being very good. I'm not so sure if that's a masterclass coaching performance, but I think that's one. If you had to give a team the heart of the weekend, I think you give it to the Australians.
But that's team culture, right? And that's part of what Rennie's built up here. Rennie has got this team heading in the right direction. This is two times now in 12 months that they've been red carded and won the game. Because a similar thing, I think, didn't the same thing happen against France? So, all those people who say red card, we must have 20-minute red cards because red cards ruin games. Well, bullshit, because that was a cracking game. Even after the red card, and Australia came back and played and won it. So, look, red cards don't ruin games. And quite often, the team with 14 players finds an extra two ghost players, whatever, because of effort. That means that they end up winning it. So, red cards don't ruin games. That's so we don't need 20-minute red cards. I think I know Stephen disagrees with me on that one. Rennie's got this team heading in the right direction and a good win for Australia.
I agree with Nocturnal Rights too about Ludlam. Ludlam, no disrespect to Billy Vunipolo, but gee, Ludlam just looked an absolute beast at breakdown, just a total nuisance at breakdown. He looked really good. There's a couple of other good stories to come out of this game as well. Caelan Neville, 33 years old, making his debut for the Wallabies. And, of course, the boy Porecki, who is the hooker for the Waratahs, who went over to England to play. I'm not too sure which club that he played for in England, Paul. You might know that, but I think that's a great story as well. In fact, I made a comment that he kind of reminded me of Stephen Moore with hair.
I'd also want to point out something that, and I'm sorry to say this, Steve, but there's something wrong with the England team. I thought I saw such great promise at the end of last year when they brought that youngster in at 10. The guy with the hair. What's his name?
Marcus Smith.
There's so much that he added to the England backline. There's so much creativity that he added to the England backline. I thought England could be a real serious threat in the coming years. But Australia do not have a great pack, and they were one player down. And traditionally, England would have ground them to dust. Certainly, the All Blacks would have done that to the Australian pack, one player down. The Springboks would have done it. And the fact that they could not control the game and exert a vice-like grip on that seven players that were left in the pack for Australia, something's not right in the England camp, in the England planning, and something's missing there. I can't tell you what it is, but something's not good.
Yeah, I mean, they are missing some players through injury and all that kind of stuff, but you've got to be able to cope with that. And it's worrying to see England in this state, with the England jersey back there. It's worrying for me seeing England in this state year after the World Cup.
And I was going to say, Australia just starting to show a little bit of depth as well. You know, they lose Banks, and I've got to say, Jordan Tapai, his name's gone out of my head as well. Yeah. Jordan Pio, is it? Came on, went into fullback, and boy, just slotted in very, very well. And he's got a very good kicking game, a good long kicking game for a fullback.
Tapai went to the wing, didn't he? And Callaway went to the fullback.
Great. But I think Pitaya can actually go into fullback as well. You're right. The winger Callaway went to fullback. But it's great to have those sort of options at the back. And I think Pitaya offers a little bit more of a threat.
Pitaya needs to get some 15 time at the Reds.
I think what happens is, and Australia have pulled this off for nearly 20 years, since they lost maybe 2005, when they lost the core of the incredible pack that included John Eales, Finnegan, those kind of players, real brutes that they had, athletic, strong, and they no longer had that front row and pack that they had, let's say, through the 90s into the early 2000s, is they sucker opposition teams into playing Australia the way they want to play. I don't know how they pull it off. I don't know how they do it. Coach after coach after coach manages to hoodwink the opposition into playing Australia at Australia's game. Whereas if the teams were prepared to do it the hard way and truck it up one-off, pick and go, grind them. Eventually Australia will crack. But teams don't do that. And you saw it so much so on Saturday when England could have absolutely subdue and penetrate. They could have absolutely put the boa constrictor on them. They didn't.
Well, yep, could have, would have, should have, unfortunately. I just want to run through the scores before we have a chat about the South Africa versus Wales game. So, Maori All Blacks versus Ireland, that was 32-17. We've already talked about that game at the beginning of the show. Romania lost Italy 13-45. Italy, again, showing why they're a Tier 1 nation. Whenever they can play Tier 2 nations, they win. Perhaps Italy a Tier 1.5, but look, they are the they are definitely better than that rung below. USA got a good win, 26-21 over the French Barbarians. So good for them. Japan, 23, France, 42. Remember, this is a France side without their players who were playing in the top 14 finals. This isn't even a full-strength France side, a bit like we saw when they toured Australia last year. So good win for France there. New Zealand, Ireland 42-19, which we've talked about. Australia beat England 30-28 with a man down. We'll come back to South Africa, Wales. But a Currie Cup 15 beats Italy A 31-27. So good to see Italy working on their depth there by putting out two teams at the weekend on that one. Canada beat Belgium 45-0. Ouch. This is Canada, who have not made the Rugby World Cup as well. So really putting it to one of the Tier 2 nations there in Europe. Argentina beat Scotland 26-18. And that was predominantly won in that first half, where Scotland only managed one penalty, whereas Argentina racked up that score. And then finally, Georgia lost to an Argentina 15. So Argentina put two sides out as well this weekend, 24-30. So Georgia, yep, still haven't beaten a Tier 1 nation, and not even a Tier 1 nation second team in that one there. The reviewer tells us that Algeria is the most underrated team in the world, having beaten other teams. Well, I'll take your word on that one, mate. I've not been following Algeria's progress on that one. So the one game I skipped over was South Africa versus Wales. South Africa coming out with the win at 32-29. But boy, oh boy, did they get a bit of a fright in this one. Only scoring 3 points in that first half, where Lewis Rees-Zammit racked up two tries there, gets at a conversion and a penalty and a drop goal. A drop goal against South Africa, John. It's a bit embarrassing there. Leading that to, it was 18-3 at half time. But South Africa got their forwards going, a couple of line out more tries to get themselves back into this. John, slow start for South Africa, and look, a lot closer at 32-29 than we expected this game to be.
Yeah, I think, first of all, you've got to give credit to Wales. They employed a really good tactic that it took South Africa a long time to cotton onto and work out how to get around it. So they had the big forward runners that the Springboks sent up in the first channel. Often, you know, the Springbok runner, someone like Ibn Etzebeth, would have a support runner to drive into contact. They would have two chop tacklers at shin height, drop the person immediately, and then they would have a jackler in over the ball. So even if they didn't turn the ball over, they were constantly slowing the ball down. And South Africa, much like the All Blacks, South Africa's game is predicated on quick ball. Runners coming around the corner, punching it up, drawing in the back line, and then creating space for people like Chesney Colby and Makazola Mapimpi on the outside, and the creativity of to be able to feed them into space. But Wales just negated that at source, well, secondary source after the first phase. So well done to them. And then they just frantically clung on by their fingernails for most of the match, barring a magnificent display of character to score a try while playing 13 against 15 in order to bring the scores level. But eventually, just the sheer difference in physical prowess, and I don't just mean size, it's speed, it's athleticism, it's strength. Eventually, as South Africa, especially in the second half, started to work out how to counteract that strategy, they just did that boa constrictor and just wrung the life out of them. And unfortunately for Wales, South Africa were vulnerable in this game, much like the All Blacks often are in the first test of the series, of the year at least. They were not very focused in the first half. They seemed to be a little bit distracted, both by the tactics of the Welsh, but also just really weren't on. And this was their opportunity. And I'm concerned for Wales in the next two games that it might go really badly for them.
Look, that chop and jackal thing probably led to that 13 turnovers by South Africa to only 4 by Wales. Look, I've only seen highlights this game. I've not watched the full thing, but Wales, on the flip side, had to do a lot of defending in this game compared to South Africa. Only 81 tackles by South Africa, 145 by Wales. If you're defending that much, if you have so little possession, which is like 43% in this one, you tend to give up more penalties. South Africa only 7 penalties, Wales twice as many, or 15. Wales also 4 yellow cards. Stephen, just go for a neutral view on those yellow cards, because I saw the highlights. I think you've seen the whole game. Is that right or not? You muted them, phrase, Stephen.
I think the very last one that basically for the penalty, I don't think the referee had much of a choice, to be honest. Even though it was just an instinctive reaction by the letter of the law,
it just
had to be penalty. And like John said, they were under the pump. They were hanging on by their fingernails. And when you're hanging on by your fingernails, it's hard work. And, you know, some real unaccustomed, you know, Dan Bigger has got a good kicking percentage. And even the conversion, you would have expected him to have kicked that. But, South Africa, they just rolled their sleeves up from the time that they rumbled their way over in the first few minutes of the second half. And they reverted back to their tactically. I think their second try also came from a drive as well. But even as John said, the try where the kick for the corner where the winger scored, was that Mapimpi that may have scored the try?
Colby.
Chesney Colby. That was a well-constructed try. But I've got to say, the moment of the match goes to Rhys Zammit. That was one heck of a try, you know, given the space and get it doing enough to get on the outside of Mapimpi, I think it was. That was pretty impressive. But we shouldn't forget, I think Mapimpi's a very good player. I don't know if he's got top-end pace because he can play centre as well.
But that the issue there was on Springbok line-out ball. So the Springbok defence wasn't in position. So as a result, they were one man short. So he had to come in and to try and mark the center. So that's what created the space. So he had to turn and chase. And well done to Zammit. I mean, great talent. But it was their ability. They won opposition lineup ball and moved it wide. And there we go. They, great execution.
No, I go along with that. But I think John pretty much summed it up from the start. And I'm like John. I fear for them. I actually feared for them in this particular test, but not to have taken that opportunity. Mm. I think they've really poked the bear more than anything else. Just want to say, Paul, I actually watched that Scotland Argentina game, and that was actually quite an entertaining game, and it's important that we actually mention it because I think that was the first time Argentina had played at home in three seasons, which is pretty incredible, and a really good game of football. And listen, credit to Scotland. They did, in that first half, they didn't look like they could create anything, but all in the space of about 5 minutes, they actually hit back, and they looked like they were going to finish with a wet sail, so to speak. But Argentina just did enough, regained the lead straight away, and really never looked like winning again. One thing I was a little bit surprised with, I was surprised to see Augustin Crevy actually come on as a replacement. Has he been injured?
Oh, he's been overseas in UK playing. But then, yeah, just about all the Argentinian team are now. I guess some boys there. I mean, Scotland obviously missing players like Hogg and Russell. Is it a change? So a few players they've left at home to rest because of the British and Irish Lions from last year, as well on that. I think one of those things is. Can you see? I can't see Ireland turning it around. I can't see Wales turning it around. Scotland could be in for a similar situation where actually, as Argentina haven't played, as you say, at home for a long time, this is going to allow Argentina to get a roll on. Australia obviously going to missing a player with the red card, but England didn't show me much that they're going to be able to necessarily win that. So. We could be in for a month of rugby championship teams beating Six Nations teams across these next 3 weeks. But let's hope it's not too one-sided and too easily scripted.
Could I just make a quick comment? And I don't want to harp too much on the Springbok game because I'm a South African. It's just an observation that the Georgian ref has taken a lot of flack. But actually, and this is why it was important to understand his decisions to watch the whole game, the incidences of the yellow cards were not like Scott Barrett should have got penalized and carded or this player is pulling their hair. They weren't the sort of foul play, shoulder to the head kind of situations. You needed to see the repeated infringements leading up again and again and again inside the 22. The clean breaks that were on scrambling tackles and then lying on the ball so there was no quick ball and a score. You needed to see the instances happen again and again until the referee said, enough is enough, you pulled this down, and they were about to go over. This is a penalty try, and the person who pulled it down, the law states that a penalty try is a yellow card, and send them off. So actually, what he did is what we want referees to do when it comes to professional fouls. We want them to stamp it out. We want them to make it unprofitable for players to lie on the to tackle back, grab somebody by the ankle, get them down, and then lie on the ball and prevent a try being scored. We want that to occur. We want the game to be able to flow. And credit to him, he took the difficult decisions and he refereed correctly, and he's got a lot of flack because of it, because there were so many cards handed up. But the problem was Wales' discipline, right? If they hadn't have done it, all of those instances were justified. And I think he deserves credit as a first-time referee at that level for having the intestinal fortitude to do what he did. So that's what we want to see from refs.
Yeah, you did right. You know, we think back to the Super Rugby semi-final where Ben O'Keefe didn't quite have the fortitude to pull the trigger when it really looked like, I think it was Luke Romano, was holding on to possession at the time. And even the most biased Blues supporter, you know, would have winced and basically said, man, if that the boot was on the other shoe, you would have expected the referee to pull the trigger. So
boot was on the other shoe.
Yeah. other foot, basically. Anyway, yeah, you know what I mean.
I wouldn't remember that. That's a beaut, Steve.
Yeah.
But so let's not to really steal one of Stephen Harris's favourite topics, but yes, John, the referee there did what he was supposed to do and what World Rugby is asking referees to do. The problem is he's the only one doing it, and we don't have consistency across referees doing it.
Yeah, but I'm saying for him to catch a flag.
Oh, Stephen's face is a picture.
Yeah, to see him catch flak is so unjustified.
Yep.
Because I thought he actually did what rugby needs to do. Rugby needs a few games like that for the players to go, oh, well, this is not worth it, right? Rugby needs players who pull hair to get a red card, and then the behavior will stop. So I thought he did really well. Yes, you're going to say something. I've got one last comment to make, though, Paul.
Players defending line-out players shouting so the attacking team can't hear the line-out call. Stop it. It's wrong.
Yeah.
It's not clever. It's not playing rugby. It's just being an arse. Referees, tell them to shut up. And do that at club level too, because we're seeing it far too much at club and kids level because I've seen the professionals do it and get away with it. But anyway, sorry, my rant.
My last comment about the Springbok game is what was really interesting to me, and remember as well, it's the first time the Springboks have played in front of a home crowd for 3 years, which is quite remarkable. They haven't for 3 years, and remember, they're world champions. And for 3 years, they haven't played a home test in front of a crowd. So that was great to see. And you could see just the euphoria from the crowd and the incredible response. I had some friends who were there. I saw some messages just talking about the incredible atmosphere at the ground. And the captain of Wales there, number 10, what's his name again, Paul?
Do you mean Bigger? Or do you mean the one that...
Bigger, Dan Bigger. Dan Bigger in the post-match... In a post-match interview, said that this is one of the greatest places I've ever got to play in, and thanked the crowd, even though they'd lost such a heartbreaker. But the interesting thing that I noticed, even though they were switched off, even though they weren't really keyed in nearly as well as the All Blacks were, the greatest sheer body of talent that I saw on Saturday was in that Springbok squad. They have got athletes in that team that are scary. And it really brought home to me why they're trying in the All Blacks to include Scott Barrett. Because the Springboks didn't even have their first choice loose forward trio available. So when Dwayne Vermeulen recovers from his knee injury, he's still rehabbing, and the same for Peter Steph de Toy, they will launch at any one time three full 2 meter plus locks, because Peter Steph de Toy's engine is so good that he plays the whole 80 at blindside, which, remember, by the way, in South Africa, only place in the world a blindside plays with number 7. So he plays blindside. And then if you want to counteract that lineout, when you've got three locks, two locks are normally lifting, various options, and Dwayne Vermeulen taking. This is what the All Blacks are trying to address, is having that. I mean, the Springboks just bring on one absolutely dominant front row. They just replace him with another lot. You know, you see Malcolm Marks come off the bench and massive scrummages come off the bench and just climb into the opposition and drill them into the ground. There is a scary amount of depth in that squad.
Yeah, but also, again, they're running a 6-2 bench. For my mind, we should get rid of two of the seats on the bench. You don't need, you need three front rowers, one person to cover locks and loosies, and one for the scrum half, and one for the rest of the backs.
Well, mind.
replacing also, 6 out of 8 of a scrum to me is wrong. But that's not South Africa's fault. That's the that's the laws.
By the way, just to point out to you what we're talking about depth, and it's not just among the forwards. Joe Esterhazen was the players, the England, what's it, the England Premier League? What's the name of the league?
Gallagher Premiership.
The Premiership. He was the players' player of the year, right? And he was selected in the last ending in end of June in the World Rugby Team of the Year at 12. He wasn't even on the bench, right? And you can't say that that's just, oh, it's South Africa's selections being driven by political agendas, because the person he's up against is Damien Delende, who had an incredible game and is one of the best players at the last World Cup. So the amount of depth that they have in that Springbok team is pretty amazing. Oh, sorry, Andre Esterhazen. Sorry, 100% right. Thanks for the correction. Andre Esterhazen. Joe Esterhazen was a different player.
The look, South Africa and New Zealand produce the most rugby players in the world, and hence we see them overseas a lot. Look, population South Africa is bigger, so yeah, as well. So yeah, no, there is a lot of very good South African players around. There always is. It's a matter of getting them playing the right slot.
But the key is though. Is that they are finally, after 30 years, they're finally tapping into the whole population.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A lot of the incredible talent that you see is non-white rugby players. The Sharks are fielding something like 10 or 11 non-white players in their starting lineup in the URC. So what we're seeing is the development of rugby across the board in South Africa, which is tremendous for the game, because it not only is good for the South African pool of players and the inspiration in South Africa, but throughout Africa, they get to see players that they can identify with.
We've overrun by 20 minutes. Thank you very much for joining us, John. A cracking weekend of international rugby, folks. There'll be another one coming up. Check out New Zealand Sport Radio, NZ Sport Radio Patreon page for my predictions in the middle of the week. Do join us on Wednesday night for the Standoff Rugby League show, as the Warriors have returned to New Zealand. Thank everyone who's joined us. Thank you, John. Thank you, Stephen, who's had to drop off for joining me. Another cracking weekend of international rugby. Coming up.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.